At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL. The PFF podcast is brought to you by Lisa Mattress. Do you find yourself distracted, forgetting things, making mistakes at work? A quality night's sleep makes all the difference. The right mattress is the difference between resting and just laying down. The Lisa mattress is the product of more than 30 years of experience in mattress engineering and hundreds of hours of testing. Comprised of three foam layers that provide cooling pressure relief, body contouring, and support, over 300,000 happy Lisa sleepers agree, myself included, the Lisa mattress gives them the rest they need. Order your Lisa mattress online at lisa.com/PFF with promo code PFF and try it risk-free for 100 nights. It ships direct to your door in a convenient box with free shipping and free returns. Find the right mattress for you at lisa.com/PFF and get the rest you need tonight. Get up to $100 off the Lisa mattress or $235 off the luxury Sapira mattress and free shipping on the Lisa mattress at lisa.com/PFF. Enter promo code PFF at checkout. That's LEESA.com/PFF, promo code PFF. PFF Podcast is also brought to you by TrueCar. Hey there, diehards. Here are some football facts that even you might not know about. The first football game was played in 1869. In an average game, the ball is typically in play for only about 11 minutes. And finally, pizza consumption rates go up during the week of a big game. Okay, you probably knew that last one. But here's another fact you might not know that's actually really useful, especially if you plan on tailgating. TrueCar also helps people get used cars. That's right, TrueCar isn't just for buying new cars. With our certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience, whether you buy new or used. And with TrueCar, users see what others paid, so they know if they're getting a good deal before they buy. They're also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with TrueCar certified dealers. When you're ready to buy a new or used car, check out TrueCar and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. Welcome in to the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo here with Sam Monson. We're live on YouTube. Hello, live YouTube viewers. We've done this two weeks in a row now, going live on YouTube. Hope you guys enjoy it. Make it a little Monday appointment viewing. Of course, if you're listening on the podcast, we're going to review every single game. We're going to go at least touch on something from every single game. We'll hit the big stories from week six in the NFL. But before we get there, Sam, you always, in the office here, give me your rugby update. And every now and again, I give you a baseball update. And you and I have no clue. I have no clue about rugby. You have no clue about baseball. We think this would be a good podcast idea in the future. So I want to hear what our viewers and listeners think.
Well, you have to explain it out fully, right? It's not just two people who don't have any idea what they're talking about the thing. It's that we both pretend like we know what the hell we're talking about. So when you strike up some conversation about the Red Sox, I'll just join in as if I have any earthly idea what the hell you're talking about and roll with it.
And that's what makes it fun.
Yeah, when I bring up, you know, rugby, Leinster, you just roll.
Leinster has, I mean, after last year's strong season, just building on it this year, just off to a great start.
This is what we're saying, yeah.
There's no break in rugby, from what I understand.
Well, a very brief one. I mean, you know.
And soccer, too. I think there's just games going on at all times.
Well, look, how much rest do you really need?
A lot. That feels like a stressful sport. But what do you think of the Red Sox, though, tying it up in the ALCS 1-1 against the Astros?
Yeah. I mean, it's the marquee matchup everybody wants to see, right?
It is.
Has to go down to the wire. Otherwise, what's the point?
Right. So you think it'll go 7 games?
Oh, yeah.
Astros or Red Sox?
It's got to be Red Sox.
Yeah.
For the history.
I mean, they did win 108 games this year.
Right.
So, great. And Leinster, great weekend, right? You were texting me all weekend.
Yeah. They put up 47 unanswered points against Wasps.
Yeah. I mean, that's like a triple A team, though.
I mean,
it's a JV squad.
Yeah.
The Wasps. Anyway, fast forward through that if you guys hated it. but also hit us up if you want to hear more rugby and baseball nonsense. All right. Let's get into the real football action from week 6. Let's start with the shootout from Sunday night. When you have a Chiefs-Patriots matchup with an over-under at about 60, I think is what it was around game time. By the way, PFF Greenline said that it would be 69 or 70.
Yeah,
was
it was
the
69 early in the week anyway.
And even so, that was our lock of the week. It went way over. 83 total points, Chiefs-Patriots. Those shootouts don't always live up to the hype, but this one certainly did.
Well, this was the game we've been talking about all season with the Chiefs, which was literally like an arena league game. It's just possessions. Who has the ball at the end, because nobody could stop anybody for almost the entirety of the game. You know, the Patriots managed to stop the Chiefs a couple of times early in the game, and I tweeted at some point. Yeah, but exactly. But I tweeted at some point during the game, the Chiefs are going to have to stop the Patriots sometime, because otherwise they're just not going to win this shootout. They're already behind a couple of possessions, and that's really what we're talking about. They ended up coming back and making it at least a game because they did get a stop or two down the way, but this was genuinely what we've been talking about all season, which is all offense, almost no defense whatsoever, and it really just came down to who had the ball at the end.
I believe it was only one punt in the entire game, too, which was the Chiefs. So you got some fourth down aggressiveness and also just teams not being stopped. This was the Patrick Mahomes game. I saw people tweeting about it. I mean, when you make the Brett Favre comparison, this was a Brett Favre game for Patrick Mahomes. It was just even from like back in the day, John Madden used to think it was so cute that Brett Favre would come out so fired up that he'd overthrow his first three passes. Do you remember that? Mm. It would be like, overthrow, overthrow. Oh, that Brett. He just comes out so fired up. That was Mahomes in this game. He came out a little jacked up, missed a bunch of throws. But more so, it was from a big-time throw, turnover-worthy throw standpoint, the Mahomes game we expected, right? 5 big-time throws, so he's still making the special stuff, but 3 turnover-worthy throws, which did come back to bite. An early interception that put the Patriots inside the 10, and then a red zone interception just outside the red zone, but in the end zone just before the half, and then had another pass that should have been picked. This truly was the ups and downs that we may have expected from Mahomes coming into the year.
Yeah, this is probably a closer reflection on who Patrick Mahomes is going to be than the guy we saw for the first few games, which was pretty unsustainably freakish in terms of all good, no bad. This is, you know, some of the bad there as well, which makes sense, right? He's unlikely to just be Superman right out of the gate. If this is the guy he's likely to be, that's pretty encouraging, right?
Because they scored 40 points in a game where he did miss a ton of throws.
Exactly. He missed a ton of throws. He made a couple of bad mistakes, but he also made some pretty spectacular things happen.
Did.
Was really good later in the game when it did matter. I mean, there's a touch of the Andrew Lux about that,
right. You
know, being roundly patted on the back for putting out the fire of the house that you started when you were trying to make a cup of coffee.
I mean, that was actually Brady last night, too.
Yeah.
But Brady started his own fire.
People love doing that, right? It's this guy. Look at this guy. He's a hero for putting out this fire. Like, yeah, but most normal people don't manage to set fire to their entire house just by making a cup of coffee in the morning. So there was a touch of that about this Patrick Mahomes performance. But it is good to be able to pull it out of the fire, you know, when it does matter, even if Brady ultimately then went down the field and scored anyway.
Right. So it does show what Mahomes can do with his arm, what this offense can do. I mean, Tyreek Hill is
freakish.
People keep mentioning this over and over again, but on a field of extremely fast players, the fact that he's that much faster than everyone else is just
he looks silly. Like a high school player. You know, when you go back and you watch everybody's like skill position high school highlight reels, it's just a case of that you don't belong on the same field as those guys, right?
How bad is this competition?
Yeah,
that
you make
at?
These runs that you can't make when you're of a comparable level of athlete to everybody else. You just weave in and out of these guys because they don't belong on the same field tackling you. Defenders are the same with Tyreek Hill. I mean, that touchdown he got over Daron Harmon, who is, you know, a pretty good athlete as a free safety.
Right.
And yet it was amazing how early into that play it was immediately obvious that he was not only catching the ball on him, but then going to turn and run around him and score. Like, he literally, Harmon didn't get close to him. He was able to catch the ball in front of him, turn immediately, and just run around the outside of him, just do him for pace to the sideline.
I turned to my wife.
That's
I said,
insane.
Watch this. I said, watch this. He's gone.
Right.
It, on a play where, again, the angles look normal and it's a 40-yard gain, not a 75-yard gain.
He caught the ball facing the quarterback, facing the line of scrimmage, away from the safety, with the safety still to beat between him and the end zone. And as soon as he caught the ball, I just said, touchdown.
Yeah.
And then he has to drop, turn around, run around the safety, and score to make that happen. And yet it was obvious that it was going to happen. That's how quick he is.
Truly amazing. The story of the game for Mahomes, 136.2 passer rating from a clean pocket, 30.9 when pressured. And that included, I mean, Mahomes threw four touchdowns. Early in the game, he missed Kareem Hunt up the seam.
Yes.
He missed a corner route, both of which the pressure just got home in time, but both passes were open. And then he chucked one up, one of his turnover-worthy plays, I believe it was, when he had Tariq on the post against zero blitz. He had him wide open, and he had an ocean to throw it to, and he just got pressured just enough. He could have had seven touchdowns.
This was such a great game because this is the game that the NFL thinks every game should be,
yes.
Right? It's the game that the rule changes have been trying to create, which is basically arena football writ large. For 80 plus points in a game, all offense, no defense, and I hate that as a concept, right? I think there's an idea that defense should be an equal competition with offense in order for the game to be at its best, right? It's not just a case of both offenses being at the same equal advantage over a defense. There should be a competition within both sides of the ball, so the defense can go toe to toe with offense as well as both sides having the same advantage. But whatever, the NFL disagrees, and they're trying to promote yardage and passing and points and all this kind of stuff. So I usually don't like that as a concept, but this was one of those games where it actually worked, and this was a really good game despite there being no defense and it being all offense. And there were some fantastic plays in there that either did get made or didn't quite get made. You know, Kareem Hunt caught 5 of 6 targets for 100 yards and a touchdown, and the one he didn't catch was that overthrow from Mahomes that would have been a deep touchdown. People forget about what a valuable part of the passing game Kareem Hunt can be. Like, he's obviously their bell cow running back, but he's a weapon out of the backfield as well. And you don't think about him because you're busy trying to deal with Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Sammy Watkins even is your next guy. You don't even get to the idea that, oh, crap, Kareem Hunt can come out of the backfield and then we're screwed.
And
like, that's how dangerous they are.
Everybody's tweeting at me, why is he taken out in two-minute situations?
Yeah.
Spencer Ware.
Also crazy.
Don't know.
No.
Now, look, Kareem Hunt had some issues pass blocking last year. I mean, there were some games where he just gets destroyed by bigger physical linebackers.
But if anybody's going to use him as a receiver rather than a pass blocker.
Yes.
And then the other thing was that play you mentioned. The Patriots legitimately dialed up a cover zero, meaning no safety in the middle of the field, blitz. They sent 6 guys against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs on 3rd and 7 with Tyreek Hill one-on-one against Jason McCourty, who's basically as fast as we are. Now,
Mike Renner, 4.8 guy?
And the thing is, it worked. I mean, it barely worked, but it worked.
But,
they got home. The 6 guys, at least 2 of them got pressure, and it was enough to make Mahomes back up and just throw up a heave ball. And he had basically half of the field to hit for that to be a viable pass, and he ended up being pressured enough that he couldn't hit half the field.
That was one of those passes Russell Wilson makes really well. He gets the zero blitz, and he just chucks it up, Doug Baldwin run under it.
I haven't actually checked the numbers, but the Patriots are one of the more aggressive teams in terms of man coverage, and they do not run zero blitz a lot.
No, it's a lot of cover one, where they have a free safety that they're creative with and a strong safety that they're creative with, but not a lot of zero.
There are teams that will dial up zero blitz a couple of times in the season, And the Patriots pulled one out on 3rd and 7 against the most potent offensive team in the NFL, and it worked.
It feels like, odd saying
a hell of a ballsy call.
Well, in a game where the Patriots gave up 40 points, it feels odd saying that they dialed up a few calls like that.
Right.
That really did make
but
a difference.
But that's the key, right? When you're talking about possessions,
right.
Literally all you need is one.
Possession.
Two stops in the game, right. Which means it's going to come down to one or two defensive plays that are the difference between winning and losing. All you need is two defensive plays in the game. If they come in the right sequence, that's the difference.
On the other side, we said Mahomes had 5 big-time throws. We had Brady with 5 big-time throws as well. A couple of them fell incomplete. He had a tight window throw to Edelman that was dropped, but down the stretch hits Gronk in stride down the field. He had a pretty good deep ball to Josh Gordon that led to the defensive pass interference. But you could kind of see that Patriots offense with all their different weapons. It felt like Gronk was just sleepwalking through the game, and all of a sudden they're like, all right, unleash the Gronk. We got to go win the game, and then he makes the big plays.
One-on-one with a cornerback/safety.
Yes.
And the amazing thing about that is if you watch that replay, he smokes him for quickness. It's his release that gets him open. Like a guy that's 260 pounds.
The entire game, though.
But
and then all of a sudden, he breaks it out.
I mean, he still wasn't even fast. It's just the quickness he has off the line laterally to be able to beat that guy. If you're thinking, you know, we're going to put a corner/safety on Gronk. The one thing that isn't going to happen is he's going to get beaten for quickness.
Right.
Now, maybe he'll get dominated at the catch point down the line, you know, and that's fair enough. That's what you live with. But the one thing that isn't going to happen is this guy's going to get smoked off the line for speed, for quickness. But Gronk just hits him with a shimmy, and he's already stacking him 5 yards off the line of scrimmage. Like a guy that's 260-plus pounds should not be able to do that. That's freakish.
Yeah, and now the Chiefs playing very shorthanded defensively.
Yes.
And it did come back to bite them with no Justin Houston, no Eric Berry, guys like Jordan Lucas out there, Breeland Speaks playing 76 snaps. By the way, Breeland Speaks was like an interior defensive lineman in college, and he's essentially playing an outside backer role, like the old Tamba Hali.
Well, he's doing
side.
That still at the same size.
Right,
as
at
well.
285.
Well, no. No, not 285. I have it on good authority that Breeland Speaks is over 300 right now.
Oh, sorry. I didn't give him enough credit.
Yeah.
At over 300 pounds.
So this is a big guy.
That felt like a mismatch that could have been exploited. So anyway, I think it is the game we were talking about. Big 12 game, Patrick Mahomes. All he does is play Big 12 games. But it was one of those 43-40 games that didn't feel like this is just horrendous defense. It was actually impressive to watch the offensive performances. I did feel like the offenses earned what they got, not necessarily the defense handed it to them.
So this is also a game that had a really great finish to it. I'm going to segue to another game that had a great finish. Because anytime I can drag the podcast back to rugby talk, I'm going to do it.
No, we
and I've
did
got
it.
I've got an opportunity now.
Oh, I
because
know
the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, trying to win the game late in the game against the Atlanta Falcons, pulled out what looked like one of the dumbest calls in NFL history. Some people on Twitter were mad at this call.
But well, actually,
this is one of the smartest plays I have ever seen in my freaking life, because they legitimately dialed up a rugby set piece move on this play, right? It was a design draw to Jameis Winston against this incredibly soft look the Falcons were giving them, right? 3-man rush, I think, everybody else dropping back to the goal line, basically, to make sure that the only thing we need to stop is a touchdown. Anything else is fine. We just have to stop the touchdown. There's only a few seconds left. So the Bucs dialed up this play where they had a quarterback draw. So Jameis gets to run into the teeth of this defense that's giving him 10 free yards. But then what they did is they had this play designed off the back end of it that essentially created a rugby backline move, right? And so they had Humphreys slot right, was going to pull this shallow drag in behind Jameis Winston. And then from slot left, DeSean Jackson was going to essentially fake a screen and then just be forgotten about and
it'd
start trailing the play behind, right?
If we could draw it right here, actually.
So Jameis runs in, basically just gets too aggressive, makes a balls out of the execution, right? But if he'd done it correctly, he would have been able to hit Humphreys behind him, who was coming in behind, and basically manufacture a 2-on-1 on the left-hand side into the space. Like, this is how rugby backline moves work. They've literally lifted this against a defense they knew the Falcons would be playing, because this is the situation. We know they're going to give us everything short of the goal line. How do we manufacture space on the outside? And even with this total mess of execution, Jameis like flinging himself forward and hurling the ball sideways, backwards, and then them somehow picking it up, scooping, and trying to get it to DeSean Jackson, even with that, he almost had the space on the outside to score. If this had actually been executed the way it was drawn up, this would have been one of the greatest plays in NFL history.
Do you think the Bucs, Dirk Cutter, whoever, has just been sitting on this play for like 20 years?
They apparently, I can't remember the guy's name, but one of the Bucs reporters has been saying they practice this maybe once a week. You've got to assume they've had this in the works for a while. But this is...
No, the alternative is you're at the 20-yard line. You have time for one play. We've seen Hail Mary's work from like the 50,
right,
which almost feels like a better bet than actually chucking it in from the 20.
Yeah.
You're a little bit closer, but the windows are really tight. You have to figure out, do I zip one in? I mean, it's almost impossible.
You've got basically two options on this play, right? Conventionally, you either just try and find your favorite route into the end zone and throw a very tight window contested catch, likely, right? Try and score that way. Or you do what most teams do, which is this kind of shorter hook and ladder play, right? Where you just, a hitch and then something off the back of it, and you try and create some sort of luck, running it in from 10 out. And that's probably not going to work either. This, though, actually pulled on rugby principles, which is the idea of manufacturing space laterally where there shouldn't be any. So you draw in defenders, you get guys to bite inside, and then you pitch the ball outside to a guy who's now got an overlap.
We need to send you to Tampa to do a special report on this.
Honestly, this is one of the smartest play designs I have ever seen drawn up, and Jameis Winston butchered it.
I love how excited you are. Anyway, Matt, so yeah, it was an exciting finish. The Falcons, they continue to put up points and move the ball at home.
Yeah, dome.
Matt Ryan still has his
Matt
dome.
Ryan.
Right. When he's in Georgia, he's good.
He doesn't have to play in Pennsylvania again, though, right?
Pennsylvania, he still struggled.
Yeah.
Over at Premium Stats, you could see a 56 and a 47.5 in Pennsylvania.
How many more times does he have to play in Pennsylvania?
I think that's it, unless they go to Penn State. Do they go to Penn State? I don't think so.
They might have to go back there in the playoffs.
It's true. So if he goes to Pennsylvania, that'll be our analysis. If they have to go to Philadelphia. But they're 2-4 now, so still in it, but it's a rough start.
If you were the Falcons, how many other routes would you give Julio Jones other than the Julio Jones route? For anyone that doesn't know, that is basically what? It's this sort of fake dig, which he then breaks right back outside to turn it into an out.
I call it an 83, a post out.
Okay, and every time he does this, he's 10 yards open.
Yeah, so I thought we had a great discussion with this just in the office a few weeks ago about the Falcons and why Julio doesn't figure it out in the red zone. He's got such great build up speed and that, like, when you give him a vertical stem, he's incredible. You give him 10 to 15 yards of vertical stem. Him and Matt Ryan have great chemistry on the post. Then he fakes the post and takes it out, exactly what you're saying. He can run the go ball. He can run a shallow. These are all 20 to 20 yard line type of routes. But in the red zone, doesn't have the short area quickness. And he's not this perfect fade guy, right? Like, A.J. Green's got better fade ball skills than Julio. Julio's got downfield ball skills. He doesn't really have great fade ball skills. And I think that's why fantasy owners are really mad at Julio for not scoring touchdowns, but he's still a top three wide receiver, top two wide receiver, because everything else he does is so incredible. But I would run that route probably five times a game.
At least.
I mean, it's
like the Tyreek Hill thing, right? The guy, I mean, it felt like they were underusing him, and he still had, 12 targets in that game.
Yeah. I mean, look, the Falcons' offense still extremely dangerous as long as Matt Ryan's throwing the ball pretty well. Matt Ryan quietly putting up ridiculous stats after the slow start in Philadelphia. His grade's not great. But statistically, fourth in the league in passer rating if you still have Ryan Fitzpatrick in the mix there. So just a weird season for Atlanta because they're so banged up defensively. And then Jameis showed the wide array of his game. He had a good grade, and he had four turnover-worthy plays. I was pointing that out to you earlier. Right now, we've got a couple reviews to check here. Four turnover-worthy plays for Jameis. And he's still graded well, meaning it's just positive, 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 positive. I mean, that's his game, right? He's going to add a ton of value, but he's also going to take some points off the board, and that you're going to have games like this.
Yeah, though he's even further on my bad list because he butchered the greatest play design ever.
I know. The full report on the rugby play from Sam Monson coming sometime in the next year.
Oh, you mock. I'm going to do that.
Where else do you want to go? AFC North?
Sure.
Steelers survive.
Yeah.
At the Bengals.
They did.
Pick play at the end?
Mm-hmm.
Was it illegal?
So what bugs me is just how bad the NFL are getting their point across. Yeah. So, like, they get each one of these plays where there's a controversial decision. And is it Al Riveron now that does the video things? Comes out. And it's just, you're terrible at this. How can you be this bad at trying to convey your own rules? Like every time they come out, it's just, this is such a terrible explanation of what it is you're trying to convey.
Yeah.
Like, come, you know, don't come out 3 minutes after the game. Come at it later in the week. You know, put some time into this production. Try and put your best foot forward and explain why your rules actually made a bit of sense. Because you're making things worse.
It was a fun game overall. It was in our home city over here in Cincinnati. It was gloomy and misty over here. You could see it in the game.
So the pregame, you know, videos, B-roll that they have of guys showing up to the stadium and all this thing, Joe Mixon appeared to roll into the stadium on a bird.
Oh, yeah, they're taking over the city here.
Now, okay, yeah, I get that. But when you leave a bird somewhere, you're still, like, on the clock for it, right? For anyone that doesn't know, birds are these, like, pay-as-you-go scooter things, right? You fire up your phone, you find out where all the birds are. They're just left around the city. You hop on one, you know, sync it up to your phone, you get charged by the mile, and, you know, you drop it off somewhere. But if you roll it, like, into a stadium, if you just park it in the locker room, you've got to be, like, on the clock whole time,
but then,
right?
I think it's fair game for anybody. If you park it outside the locker room, anybody that works at the stadium can just grab it.
You've got to leave it, like, in, you know, publicly accessible places.
Is that the rule?
I don't think you can just leave it in the locker room and say, well, anybody can get it if they want to. Good luck getting at it.
I assume Joe Mixon can afford a day's worth of
Well, that's possible,
bird
true,
rental.
Yes. Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah. But then you get into the ethical question of whether he should be taking a bird off the street just so we can park in the locker room.
Yeah.
I don't have the answer to that. I'm just leaving it out there as a question.
It's a great question. Our boy George, he's a big bird guy. He'll know the rules on
right.
it.
So
bird's around
that's
town
a bird that wasn't available for George because it was sitting in Joe Mixon's locker.
Well, George, luckily, didn't need it because he sits on NBC Sunday Night Football producer Fred Gaudelli's lap during the game. For you guys that don't know, George Shahori of the PFF Forecast, I joke that he sits on Fred Gaudelli's lap. He's actually sitting directly next to Fred Gaudelli, who produces Sunday Night Football. So when you hear our boss, Chris Collinsworth, using some win probability stuff, some fourth down probability stuff, it comes straight from George. So it is kind of cool to see the PFF influence on Sunday Night Football. It's really not just because Chris is on the broadcast. Fred and the rest of the production team love what we bring to the table there.
They don't just love what PFF brings to the table. We could see they want to put useful information on the screen.
They do.
You know, there are a bunch of broadcasts out there that don't really. They just want to throw something at you, and they don't really care whether it's insightful or not. They just want a number. But I've always thought that, you know, that'd be good. The field goal thing. Look at that. It's a 63-yard field goal, but that would have been good from 73. Hey, would it, really? I mean, it didn't look that good.
And now they're saying...
They pulled it out. They've pulled out the math that they already had sitting there from that golf, you know, the golf program that they run, whatever golf's version of Hawkeye is. And now they're able to actually put numbers and tell you how far the field goal would have been from. I think that's kind of awesome.
Yeah. Weird game for the Steelers defense. Only 3 total pressures between T.J. Watt and Bud Dupree off the edge. But the interior guys, Stephon Tuitt, Javon Hargrave, Cam Hayward, really good game for those guys getting after the quarterback. So Steelers remain maybe what we thought they were coming into the season. They've survived to this point, and AFC North, you know, remains extremely competitive.
Yeah, except the Browns and Baker didn't do it.
Baker had a rough one.
Yeah.
He had a rough one. There were a lot of tight window throws that were just misses, and I think the Chargers defense started to become a little bit more what we thought they would be before the season with guys like Casey Hayward on the back end, Desmond King with a big game, Derwin, of course, with another big game and a sack.
Of course, yeah. Best pass rusher rookie.
Now, unfortunately, here's what happened yesterday. Derwin plays the 1 o'clock game. Mm. I see that he picked up a sack.
Yeah.
He goes to 4. Mm-hmm. And I'm dancing on Bradley Chubb's grave.
Right. And then what happened?
Then Chubb picks up 3. So now it's 5-4. So for the first time, Bradley Chubb has now exceeded Derwin James in sacks. It's 5 for Bradley Chubb, unless we change something on review and pull something away from him. But right now, it's 5 from Bradley Chubb, 4 for Derwin James, the safety.
Yes, which is still respectable,
thanks,
right? But it doesn't quite back up your better pass rushing.
I know. Credit to Bradley Chubb. We'll talk about them when we get there. He has been playing some good football.
Going back to Baker for a second, right? Baker clearly played his worst game, I think, in the NFL so far. We all agree with that. Struggled more than he has in the past. But this receiving thing is just a mess, right? The Browns receivers suck. I mean, Njoku made some plays. They're non-wide receivers are okay, right? Njoku made some plays. Duke Johnson is a good receiver out of the backfield. But anybody that's actually a wide receiver right now, because there's no Rashad Higgins on the field, is terrible.
That's why.
Like, stop throwing the ball at Antonio Callaway. He's awful.
No, I got him starting in my Dynasty League.
Yeah?
I don't need him because I win every week.
Okay.
But I do have him starting. Well, maybe he should drop another pass.
Maybe he's a guy for next year.
Jarvis, that's fine.
Because he's pretty terrible.
It is
right
Dynasty,
now.
So it's okay.
Right.
Jarvis Landry, 2 for 9 for 11 yards targeting him?
Yeah. Yeah, and there was a lot of bad Baker in that as well. But Landry's a specific type of receiver, right? You need guys on the outside to do the things that Landry isn't going to do or can't do or whatever you want to pigeonhole that is. Landry is a specific type of receiver that will complement well with Duke Johnson, with David Njoku, but you need some guys on the outside that can actually threaten the ball downfield and make some plays. Antonio Callaway might be able to threaten you downfield, but he's not going to drop the ball when it arrives.
Landry will flash some of that stuff, but he has games where he just straight up disappears. Last year against the Ravens, when they got destroyed by the Ravens, he absolutely got demolished.
I think he can make some plays downfield, but it's going to be a case of what the defense gives as opposed to what he generates.
And early on, when Baker was having success, we saw him catching seam routes and some tight window throws and everything. The Chargers continue to have this two-headed monster at running back. Melvin Gordon averaging 7.3 yards per carry yesterday, and Austin Eckler at 8.6. It really is a pretty good combo there. Gordon, of course, finds the end zone 3 times. They combine to force 8 missed tackles between the two of them. As much as we talk about pass games, there is really good balance across this Chargers offense.
Well, it's like almost anything in the NFL is that it's often pretty much anything can matter if you're sufficiently bad at it, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, punting doesn't really matter. But if you're horrendous at it, you can make a real mess out of punting to the point where it does matter.
But it's also like even if it's 10% of the game or 15% of the game, whatever the percentage is, you still want to maximize. You still want to do well at it. It helps you get to that 100%.
And if you're sufficiently bad at anything, that percentage can become a real problem. So run defense doesn't really matter unless you're so freaking bad at it. The teams are just running all over and you can't stop them and they're scoring endless points.
I thought it mattered for the Chiefs a little bit last night.
Yeah, it mattered for the Chiefs.
Six a pop.
It mattered for the Browns. They couldn't stop the run. They couldn't do anything on defense. Like this was, as much as people were going to focus in on Baker and the fact that he didn't have his best game and all that kind of stuff, like the Browns defense has been pretty hit or miss this season. It's either been pretty suffocating and really challenged teams or it's had the living crap beaten out of it.
It's
weirdly against AFC West teams, but whatever. Like, it got absolutely rolled by the Chargers, and the Chargers do not have a good offensive line. They've got some of their own problems. They've got some good skill position players and a good quarterback and all that kind of stuff, but the Browns' defense should not be getting eviscerated the way it was in that game, and that's going to be their problem this year, that defense cannot play consistently.
It's been really turnover driven. They have a ton of turnovers,
which is tough to sustain. That 09 Greg Williams team, right?
Yeah.
When they actually get a run of turnovers. Yes. Greg Williams. What did I say?
Just Greg Williams team.
Oh, yeah.
Saints. I was just reminding people that was the
Saints. So 09 was basically the one year where they actually had good defensive play out of that team, and it was because it was all turnovers. All they got was a whole bunch of turnovers, and that was what propelled them to the Super Bowl. But that is, if you can't sustain that, it's not good. So at the moment, the Browns is the same thing. It's driven by turnovers, but they're not able to do it every week.
Credit the Chargers offensive line. Strong run blocking grades across the board, though. So it goes both ways. Give them credit. And Browns defense was rough in that one. Give me one more marquee game to touch on, then we'll fly through the rest of the league.
Well, there weren't that many. What about Washington, Carolina? No. Let's go to the Rams. The Rams got held to 23 points by the Denver Broncos, who also kind of stifled the Chiefs.
This is what we said last week.
Yeah.
The Broncos don't have the same defense they had 2 or 3 years ago when they were a top three defense, but they still have a lot of good parts. And in any given week, they've shown that they could just make things difficult for these good offenses, and they did it for the Rams. I mean, it was cold and all that stuff, but it wasn't...
That's going to help.
It helps a little
cold,
bit.
Cold, mile high, a bit of snow.
Yeah. It's tough to play
also,
in Denver.
They knocked Cooper Kupp out of the game by horse collaring. That's going to help.
Yeah,
he came back, but still.
But he limited.
Yeah.
So, you know, they got a nice... Jared Goff had another kind of unlucky interception this week. But, yeah, they did a pretty nice job, even though, again, we go back to the run defense. Here's the way you sum up run defense, right? Todd Gurley ran for 208 yards, and they only scored 23 points, the Rams. So, like, you know, if you're going to pick your poison, would you rather give up 400 yards passing or 200 yards rushing? You're going to give up the 200 yards rushing because you can actually still stay in the game a little bit easier.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting that so far the Broncos have done the best job of anybody shutting down the league's best two offenses.
Yeah.
Now they've lost both those games, right?
Well, yeah.
So it's not because it's not that good of a story.
Case Keenum has been an issue.
Yeah. But, you know, that's that at least bodes well that the defense is capable of better things.
I made another guy making a big play, Cortland Sutton, another nice downfield catch. I love it. We run the numbers on these tight window just jump balls. The things that people call 50-50 balls are really not. Like 18 to 20% balls. And Keenum just throws a jump ball, and Sutton goes up and gets it.
He sunned Troy Hill.
Yeah,
he did. That was a bad, bad Troy Hill day. So people are kind of like, you know, Case Keenum, does he just suck now? And, you know, poor Case Keenum. He's got this opportunity to start now, and now he's terrible.
Poor Case Keenum.
Here's the thing, right? Case Keenum has guaranteed himself a Matt Cassel career with that season he had last year, right? He's guaranteed himself a decade of stealing money out of NFL teams who will always keep giving a guy a shot who showed one good year starting.
Oh, he's got it made.
Like, Matt Cassel is still getting jobs based off that 1 year in 2008.
Just hold on. Look at Case Keenum's career grades. Everything's in line. Everything's right.
Except
for 2017.
Right.
So he did it at the right time, hits free agency, goes and makes some money, reverts back into Case Keenum, as we expected,
so,
gets out of the dome, goes back outdoors, and he's bad again.
And he's presumably going to, so he won't see the duration of that contract, right? So poor Case Keenum in that he's not going to see out that deal. He's not going to be, you know, the future. But he's going to spend the next decade getting free money out of teams who are like, remember what he did back in 2017? If we can just harness that, it's there. It's in there. We can get it out of him. Throw more money at him. That's what's going to happen.
Case Keenum, your next Matt Cassel.
Right.
Unfortunately, I don't think Chad Kelly's much better. Denver fans calling for him. Chad Kelly had to come in for one
You saw enough in your one snap.
Yeah. I don't like the way he took the knee at the end of the half when Keenum was, Keenum was in.
So Chad Kelly's a write-off based on that knee.
Well, he might get a shot. Everybody was saying, hey, John Elway was at the Oregon game this weekend, perhaps checking out Justin Herbert, our number one NFL draft quarterback prospect, as of right now, and I expect that to not change, though a lot of heavy rumors that Herbert's going back to school. We'll have a lot more draft content here on the podcast. Whenever you guys want it, if your team's out of the race and you guys want more draft content, let us know. We're always willing to do that. It's usually around this time. It's usually Browns fans. But
not anymore.
They've got more hope, despite what happened yesterday. Yeah, let us know, as always. Let's fly through the rest of the league. Bills, Texans. The Texans win 20-13. Huge regression game for Deshaun Watson. I'll continue to say it about the Bills. That defense is tough to play against, especially, you know, against the pass. They make it just very difficult, but their offense just can't get out of their own way.
Yeah, so the interesting thing with Deshaun Watson, who's been playing, by and large, much better this year than he was a season ago. In fact, actually, he's almost exactly at the number of snaps he played last year now, so it's almost a comparable season, body of work, and he's been much better this year. But when you play with, A, the style that he does, and B, the sheer weight of disaster around him in terms of offensive line, all that mess, when it goes bad, it's going to go bad in a major way. Like, it's going to get ugly. And we just had one of those games. So this was kind of like the game, his first start, right, that was dragging down his grade all of last season.
Yes.
And he was slowly pulling it back in the right direction with every great game he had. This was basically that game again. It was just ugly almost from start to finish.
And he didn't have the excuse of coming off the bench and facing a really good Jaguars defense like he did last year.
But, again, he was, what, under pressure, 18 out of 33 dropbacks. Like,
it's more than half, Sam.
Yes, and we keep talking about 40-odd percent being an important watershed line. 50 is just, no. Not
this was the game you were expecting Julien Davenport to have all year. Three sacks as of now. Three sacks, three QB hits, and three hurries. That's 9 pressures total from their left tackle. Jerry Hughes getting the best of him. Watson had 2 bad fumbles and a disastrous interception. One unlucky interception, one disastrous interception.
Jerry Hughes is this fun player who is... He's almost the prototype right now of being good enough to destroy a bad offensive tackle. Like, he will. He's probably been the single most important player in 2 separate wins, right, this season?
Yeah, against Minnesota.
Sorry, two separate games. So 1 win, 1 defeat.
Right.
This game where they really stifled the Texans' offense, and the game against Minnesota where he destroyed Riley Reiff. But
13 pressures in that
you
game.
Put him up against an elite left tackle, and he gets shut down. Like, David Bakhtiari completely took him out of the game.
But
like,
this
eliminated
him. But this is why I don't think you necessarily want to adjust for competition, why we don't necessarily do that with our grades. There is value in exploiting mismatches in the NFL.
Like I say,
I want a guy that's going to get 8 or 9 pressures against
him. It led almost directly to one win, and it kept him in this game.
Right. So, Buffalo, remains a team that will play some ugly football games.
Yeah.
Josh Allen got hurt. Nathan Peterman came in threw a very, very bad pick six.
Yeah, and another pick. Like his, I mean, how are you that bad?
I don't know.
It's amazing.
I'm more ready to write him off than I am Chad Kelly, though.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
I mean,
I've seen enough.
He's becoming his own parody at this point. It's like Nathan Peterman comes in the game, got a few snaps left. He's got he has to pass the ball because we're down. Oh, yeah, there's the pick six.
Pick six in
Come
the tie
on.
Game. That was
rough. And then, like, next, oh, there's another interception. I mean, this is ridiculous. You should not be capable of throwing that volume of interceptions. Like, it's actually hard work to put the ball in defender's way that much.
Oh, he's setting records. All right, Bears at Dolphins. I thought it was a surprising game. I saw Rex Ryan made a comment about Miami, and he said that they've got the best home field advantage in the NFL. I don't know if that's the case, but I do think there is something to difficulty playing in Florida. Temperatures were over 100 degrees. There is something to that, I think, playing at Miami or at Jacksonville, at Tampa Bay.
When we did the training camp tour and we went down to Miami, that practice was hot.
Yeah, it's a thing,
that
right?
Was insane.
I mean, Brady struggled at Miami throughout the years.
Even in comparison with other southern places.
Right.
Like, Miami versus Tampa was a different world.
So I think there is something to it, and that's what we saw. 31-28, Miami over the Bears. The Bears' defense had been our highest-graded defense, hadn't played a ton of great teams.
That's the big story, right? Mitchell Trubisky, relatively struggling, I don't think is a massive shock. That's going to happen a few times this season.
The numbers were still great.
For that defense to get exposed the way it was, I mean, that really taps the brakes on the Chicago hype train.
Right.
Khalil Mack got shut down for the first time this season. Akeem Hicks was still fantastic, but they had a couple of plays where they just let Miami receivers run through the entire defense. Like, I paused one of those plays, the Albert Wilson one. He catches the ball running across, and there's literally three defenders have encircled him perfectly. You're like, there is no way he should be scoring on this play. And then somehow makes a bunch of different Bears players dive at the floor, trailing in his wake, runs another 60 yards and scores. Like, I mean, that's bad, right?
Yeah.
That's questions for that Chicago defense.
And then Trubisky, you said he struggled, and if people are listening, they said, well, his passer rating was 122. Mm-hmm. There's no bigger discrepancy. We've talked about Roethlisberger on the show, but Mitchell Trubisky, as of right now, 31st in our QB grading. That might fluctuate a couple spots by the time you hear this. 31st in PFF grade, 105.6 passer rating is 7th in the NFL. I don't think I've ever seen a discrepancy that big, and that just shows what Matt Nagy and those playmakers are bringing to the Bears offense.
Half of that yardage was after the catch. Tariq Cohen was making crazy things happen.
By the way, I'm talking on the season.
He's
31st on the season and 7th. When did he be? I know he had the 6-touchdown game, but this is a guy, every time people watch him, they're like, man, Trubisky's really struggling.
Yeah.
And before you know it, he's 7th in the league in passer rating. How did that happen?
He had a couple of games where he was absurd. But, you know, when you're talking about it just compared with the numbers in this game, just the box score of this game, Tariq Cohen was making a bunch of crazy things happen after the catch. He had, 88 yards were after the catch for him. There was a lot of plays in that statistical. The passer rating thing is not a measure of quarterbacks. We've said this before. It's a measure of the overall success of your passing offense. So the quarterback is obviously a part of that. He's the guy that delivers the ball. But there's sometimes it's all quarterback. Sometimes it's all receivers.
Well,
sometimes
overtime,
it's a mix of two.
Over time, a quarterback grade and passer rating will generally match up, but
usually,
time
yeah.
being like 5 years, 10 years,
yeah, yeah.
in any given season, it could fluctuate. In any given game, it absolutely
yeah.
could be.
So when you look at a guy who's got a great passer rating in a game, it may be because he had a great game, or maybe because he got the ball in the hands of people who made a bunch of stuff happen and added a bunch of numbers to his stats.
So overall, it ends up becoming a very confusing game. The Bears to 3-2, the Dolphins go to 4-2. For two teams, we still have a lot to figure out. The Bears have another AFC East matchup next week hosting the Patriots. So we'll learn a little bit more about the Bears next week, I believe. Cardinals, Vikings, anything in particular that stood out here? I didn't think Cousins played a particularly good game, but the Cardinals just overmatched here.
Yeah, this went about as expected, I think. The Cardinals' defense played pretty well. Chandler Jones had the kind of game we were expecting, given what he was going to be going up against. One note of potential optimism for the Vikings' offensive line, which has zero notes of potential optimism so far. Brian O'Neill, rookie right tackle, got in, played kind of well. Didn't allow a sack so far, a couple of total pressures, blocked well in the run game. I mean, he looked like a way better tackle than Rashad Hill so far, who unfortunately is now playing on left tackle rather than right tackle, so it's not like they got him off the field. But right. still, the fact that they may have potentially found a guy who can play.
Two pressures on 40 attempts is pretty good
yeah.
at tackle. So that's good optimism for the Vikings there.
Also, Adam Thielen is still freaky.
Yeah, Thigs and Dealing.
Thigs
still,
and Dealing.
Still dealing.
Less of Thigs this week, more Dealing.
More Dealing. Colts at Jets. We're sitting here in the office yesterday, and the Colts are down about 20, and Mike Renner sums it up. He goes, Andrew Luck is just the best down 20 quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah.
It's like he doesn't stop. He just completes every pass. He had four touchdowns quietly yesterday, but the captain did put his team in some rough spots. It was another classic dig yourself into a hole, try to dig yourself out, and it was too little too late because, well, the Jets scored 42.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's like, there's so many metaphors for what exactly he does, but he gets all this credit for, you know, rebuilding the thing you didn't need to take apart in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like I fixed my car that was lying in 58 different pieces in the street. But the only reason it was in 58 different pieces is because you were trying to, like, replace a seal on something and you needed to dismantle the entire car.
Something I would do.
To make it happen. Like, there's only so much credit you should be getting for that.
Can we look at Sam Darnold's grades here? Just look that people can't see. Steps down. Mm-hmm. He started week one. He got worse.
Yeah.
Worse. And then worse.
Yeah.
And then he went way back up week five. And then week six.
That has the makings of a rather fetching Dalton coaster about it.
Right? And then next week it'll be up here. And then next week. So it just looks like steps going down and then steps going up.
Yeah, but I want it to come back down again so it can go true.
Yeah, we need a full coaster.
True coaster.
Either way, the very young Sam Darnold here.
The other player who's
played well.
Season grades look a lot like that is Quentin Nelson, who has continued to go up.
Yeah, and we have, especially with guards, like, you're definitely not going to write off anybody after three or four games, but especially offensive linemen, we see a lot of improvement.
Yeah,
those
and
guys.
There was a certain degree to which the week before could be down to they played New England and they don't really have a great bunch of defensive linemen. But
right.
the Jets have Leonard Williams, so he actually faced some legit defenders this
yeah.
week.
So 42-34, the Jets win. I thought we saw some optimism for the Jets. The Colts defense depleted and not good, but looking for anything you can.
Yeah, the Henry Anderson revenge game didn't go great for Henry. Not a good grade. One hurry.
Classic.
The end.
Classic Henry. To offset the good grade he had the week before.
Yeah.
How bad are the Oakland Raiders? They lose 27-3.
They are the worst team in the NFL right now.
Are they worse than the Cardinals?
Yes. They are terrible. They're horrendous.
Really?
They're abysmal. Colton Miller just got abused in this game. Now, apparently he's playing with a sprained knee, so it's not all his fault, but... I mean,
so let me ask you this. How bad? So, like, if Tyron Smith is playing on a busted knee,
uh-huh.
then you start to say, okay, 90%, 80%, 50% of Tyron Smith is worth what compared to, say, Chaz Green?
Yeah.
Colton Miller, who's already, he's a rookie.
Yeah.
We already don't know how good he is when he's healthy.
Uh-huh.
How bad does his knee, like, at what point is it like, all right, well, the backup has to be better than this guy who's already not that great and he's hurt?
Yes. The problem is they're already playing Brandon Parker at right tackle, who is, you know, who would be a questionable option at left tackle.
Both of their
So you're going
picks.
Even deeper into the depth chart. Like, I get the point that he is so bad right now that you have to be asking the question of how bad can the guy behind him on the depth chart be until he's healthy at the very minimum.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very real question to be asking. But there is a chance that he's still better than the guy behind him. But he had multiple plays in this game where when it happened, you're like, I need to see a replay. Did he get tripped? No, he right. did just get pitched straight backwards on his ass by Frank Clark, who just ran through him. There was some terrible plays in this.
Hey, Maurice Hurst had his fourth straight really good game.
Yeah.
That was encouraging.
Derek Carr put up some mind-blowing numbers from a futile, inept passing point of view.
It's actually amazing.
He actually had more attempts at or behind the line of scrimmage than he did beyond them. Austin said that his average depth of target from a clean pocket was 2.5 yards or something downfield.
2.5 yards. Plus sacked 6 times, but 142 passing yards on 31 attempts. That's 4.6 yards per attempt. But more importantly, he completed 74% of his passes, 23 completions for 142 yards.
Yeah.
23 for 142.
I mean, he had 2 pass attempts that traveled more than 10 yards. from the line of scrimmage.
I like
they were
number.
Both incomplete, by the way.
So a lot of times when you throw short from a clean pocket, why does that happen? Maybe teams are blitzing you.
Hmm.
So what happens is, you know, they bring five, they bring six, and before the pressure gets there, you get rid of it because there's
routes.
A hole in the defense, right? He was blitzed twice.
Yeah, that's not the reason.
40 dropbacks.
Yeah, he was playing terribly.
It was a fascinating game. Derek Carr has some clean pocket issues every now and again.
The Raiders' offensive line was a disaster. He was bad, even without the offensive line being a disaster. The defense was terrible. They were getting gashed left and right. They've benched anybody of quality. Like, they are in full rebuilding mode. I mean, if there's one coach who has the time to do that, it's Gruden and his 10-year contract.
It's like 10 years.
But they are, like, full rebuilding. I mean, they are junking this whole thing and starting over.
Derek Carr for Jameis Winston. Who says no?
The Bucks.
Fresh start for both. Well, I got Bucks fans saying no way. I have Raiders fans actually saying no way. We would never take Jameis Winston. And then I have Bucks fans saying no way. We would never take Derek Carr. I think that's why it's a perfect trade.
So in terms of on the field, right, let's assume we're not discussing Jameis and his off-field discretions.
Yes.
Which obviously is going to, depending on where you stand on that stuff, dictates how you're going to feel about that, right? But from an on-the-field point of view, I don't think Jameis Winston is ever going to become this good quarterback that you think he will. I think he's going to remain this inconsistent frustration for the rest of his career. And sometimes that will produce some sublime games, and sometimes it'll produce these ridiculous games. Whatever. I still think he's a way better option right now than Derek Carr, who I think is pretty firmly along the road paved by his elder brother in terms of just being broken.
Look, I want to see more. I mean, just pure statistically.
Can't fight genetics, Steve.
He's still completing over 70% of his passes with 7.7 yards per attempt. Those usually don't go well together. Like, they're still producing a little bit. I know they've got the third most yards after the catch in the league. And we're 2 years removed from him being like ascending into the top 10.
Yeah.
In our grades and our evaluations.
He
still has two really good years of play under his belt.
You can only run away from bloodlines for so long. And he has firmly,
now you're blaming David Carr.
Firmly entrenched bloodlines of a bust.
It's David
There's
Carr's
just no
fault.
Way of escaping that.
Oh, God. So the Raiders score 3 points. That's a long flight home from London.
Also, so at some point in the game, they were down like three scores. And the commentary was like, so the team that arrived in London with days to acclimatize is beating up on the team that arrived here on Friday. Now, I'm not saying that was the reason, but if you're going to get your ass kicked, it's probably not a good thing to leave out there as a potential, you know, mistake.
We've had London games since, what, 2008, 2009?
I think was the first one. Maybe.
I mean, we've got almost 10 years, at least probably 10 years of London data and research.
Uh-huh.
When do teams arrive? How do you acclimate yourself, especially coming from the West Coast? You think there'd be some trends emerging.
I might have got there before Friday. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, probably. Especially as a West Coast team.
Yeah.
8 hour difference between Oakland, Seattle, and London.
Yeah.
All right, Panthers at Redskins. I think it's just another game in the NFC where the teams are all average to good. Average to good to great. And, you know, any given week, we have the Redskins who looked like that loss against the Saints on Monday night should have counted for four. But then they beat the Panthers 23-17 at home.
Yeah, and this is a big statement game for them. For a couple of teams in the NFC East actually had those. I want to say I'm wrong about Adrian Peterson. We said when he signed before the season that it would make absolutely no difference whatsoever. It was an inconsequential signing. It hasn't been. He's actually been a reasonably important part of that offense. He's still got gas in the tank in terms of rushing. But more importantly, the Redskins are using him in the passing game in a way the Vikings didn't think he could do.
That always boggled my mind his entire career. Why couldn't he catch a screen or a check down and then become a runner?
Right. So that's basically all the Redskins are asking him to do, and it turns out that he's at least that competent.
Yeah.
They still don't really trust him to pass block, and that's fine. He can't do that for whatever reason. There's no real excuse for a guy that physically talented not being able to pass block, but whatever. But it turns out he can be at least a serviceable receiver as just a check down guy, a guy that's going to catch screens, you know, a simple standard running back without being, you know, a receiver plus, a guy that can actually add value there. He can at least be on the field in passing situations, which makes him a much more valuable player.
Yeah, he's caught seven passes for 136 with six forced missed tackles on those seven catches.
Good signing. Not an inconsequential signing. My bad.
Fair. Redskins remain confusing.
Yeah.
And the Panthers remain confusing. I think they're a team that year in, year out, I always feel like they overachieve compared to what their roster should be bringing to the table. Like, they don't have guys that I don't that should be rushing the passer. They've got you know, inconsistent players like James Bradberry in the secondary, and I just think it catches up to them at some point this season. They fall to 3-2. Cam's overthrowing passes down the stretch, that wasn't a big surprise.
Yeah, that's always going to happen.
We were watching that saying, hey, might overthrow a couple here.
The other statement game from an NFC East team was Dallas beating the crap out of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Because we said that going into this game. This was a big game for Dallas, who needed to actually win against a pretty decent opponent to prove that they were not, you know, this season meant something for them. They had Conor McGregor in the building, which is kind of bizarre. But he was like down, he was in the huddle at one point, like cheering on the Cowboys. Off. No, that was terrible.
His throw looked like Mahomes under pressure, kind of didn't set his feet.
So I tweeted out, you know, basically an apology on behalf of Ireland for a player throwing a ball like that.
It was embarrassing.
It was bad, right? In our defense, it's not our national sport or within the top 15 of our national sports. So he's probably never thrown a ball before. The way you could probably be tipped off there is that he didn't appear to connect the idea that the laces were an important part of that. He just had hold of the ball and was flinging it away.
Yeah, but
he was
balancing it on his hand and trying to...
Yeah, no, that wasn't good. Having said that, that was only the second worst quarterback mechanics in that game.
Ooh.
The worst being from Blake Bortles.
I see.
The guy actually getting paid money to throw balls.
So I apologize on behalf of...
Blake Bortles?
Americans.
Okay.
That's not how we throw objects like Bortles. I was interested mostly in the Cowboys being really creative offensively. We had 11 rushes from Dak Prescott, 7 of which were scrambles, but there were a few design runs in there. He did fumble twice, which crushed his grade, one of which bounced directly back to him.
Yeah, what the hell?
Thank you. But there was some creativity there. Zeke, you know, an efficient game, 24 carries for 106. And, you know, they had a lot of just easy underneath passes and stuff like that for Dak. They did a much better job of scheming, and they've been taking a lot of heat for not scheming very well this season offensively.
Yeah. Did you see how badly Yannick Ngakoue beat up on Tyron Smith at times in that game?
Yeah.
Now, it wasn't that bad because Tyron Smith only allowed 3 total pressures, still graded okay.
One of those wins, though, was
when he was beat,
really good.
It was so ugly.
Yeah. Ngakoue had 5 total pressures, 2 of which were sacks. The Jaguars' defense, weird, because I think the talent's all still there. Our grades have been much lower on them this year. And it was one of those things where I'm like, PFF, you're just stupid. You don't know. I'm criticizing ourselves.
Smart.
I think they're better than that. They're better than that, but they got torched in this game.
Big game from Randy Gregory. His best game this season, certainly. 1 sack, 2 hits, 1 hurry on just 17 snaps. That's back-to-back good games from Randy Gregory, who might actually be proving to be, you know, a useful member of this defense that it looked like he could be heading into the season based on the preseason.
That's huge. They really, because they needed a guy like him.
Yeah.
You know, to complement what DeMarcus Lawrence is doing. And I will say the one other thing real quick in this game, I wrote before the season about the Cowboys back 7 being just this interesting match that I think they can, you know, match up with a lot of different types of offenses. I think we're starting to see that, especially, I didn't even factor in the Jalen Smith, you know, recovery into that, but he looks fast and he's making plays, had a forced fumble, and it was a forced fumble, right? What great play did he make? Didn't he force a fumble?
I don't remember.
There was a lot of football yesterday. But either way, he graded extremely well. He's been making a ton of plays. They added Leighton Vander Esch. We have Byron Jones playing like one of the top corners in the league. So there's just a lot of nice players on the back end that can help them week in, week out. Dallas, also just a team that's been much better at home this year. All right, we got one final game to get through. Let's talk about this disaster in Tennessee.
We got this is all the games, right? Because last time we missed one.
We missed one on one of the previews somehow.
Yeah.
But I definitely blame Matt for that.
Definitely.
Definitely Matt screwed up on the schedule. So we've hit every game. Now we've got one of the most amazing stat lines you'll ever see. Marcus Mariota going 10 for 15 as a passer. 10 for 15.
That's
for
not
117.
The amazing stat,
don't
right?
care. That's not that amazing.
No.
With 11 sacks.
That's kind of amazing.
26 official dropbacks with 11 sacks.
That's pretty impressive.
Now, we have to make the point that sacks usually point to the offensive line. This one is one where you have to just have equal blame across the board. The O-line gave up some. Mariota was to blame for some. Wide receivers weren't getting open. And you need to be able to scheme up easy passes, right? You need to be able to scheme up. Somebody's got to get open quickly, either schematically or from a route running standpoint. And even with Hall of Famer Corey Davis on the field, the Titans just didn't have it.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
I think I'm right in saying that the Titans punted every single drive in this game except one. And the one drive they didn't punt was the end of the game where they ran out of time.
That's absolutely incredible.
Right?
It was amazing.
They literally punted every single drive except the close of the game where they just ran off, the clock ran out.
We luckily, Sky Sports had some technical issues yesterday, and we were going to be on Sky doing our weekly hit about this game.
Yeah.
And luckily, we didn't have to.
Oh, thank God we didn't have to
discuss the incompetency that was the Titans offense yesterday.
That must be a record, right? Has anybody ever gone through a game where you punted every drive?
I mean, somebody probably has.
Yeah, but like back in the 20s where people were like running through mud and there was no, you know, the field barely existed.
Yeah.
Like, not since the advent of, you know, AstroTurf and stuff.
So this was rough. Ravens, big win on the road, 21-0.
Yeah.
Flacco plays an efficient game.
See, this is why I can't buy into the Titans, ever.
Yeah, I understand.
Because they're going to roll in with a game like this. And you're like, well, what the, I mean, you know.
Yeah. I understand. Mariota just fails to take that next step. But again, I think there's just so many things to blame in this one. It's tough to just point to him, just the offensive line, just the playmakers. It's just there needs to be an overhaul there in Tennessee. They're going to be in London next week.
That's the Chargers. They should just leave now.
So it's a 9:30 a.m. game for the Chargers. Chargers, what time is that? Oh, that's a 6:30 a.m. game. For the Chargers next week.
That's pretty harsh.
That's their chance.
Yeah, they should get out there now.
They should probably get out there, get acclimated. Any other takeaways on this game?
No, just the outright depression of having to watch the Titans play.
The Patriots and Chiefs punted once. The Titans only punted. That sums up the week.
Yeah, except for the one drive where they just ran out of clock.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they would have had to find a way to punt from the four.
Yeah, that's it. All right, Sam. Pretty exciting week 6 as always, guys. We'll be back later in the week previewing week 7. Special thanks to our sponsors, True Car and Lisa Mattress. Of course, get to lisa.com/PFF with your promo code PFF to go get a whole bunch of money off your Lisa Mattress, $160 off. And of course, get your PFF Elite Package, Premium Stats 2.0. You get all the grades and analysis from this weekend and PFF Greenline for next week's picks. We'll see you guys on Thursday. Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week 1. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.